Guys, 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 hey guys, 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 what, guys, what, oh, by the way, prime time! Guys, that was really cool, that episode, I think. Hello, this is Vangelis here with WTF Prime Time. I'm joined by, Gog.
Hi.
And Aaron.
Hi.
And Omegas Prime.
Hi.
And I really want to dive into this one, because that was kind of a cool episode, I thought. We're going to talk about Transformers Prime, One Shall Rise, Part 1. So basically, the reason I'm so kind of jazzed is because, really, I think I'm just going to give Gog the floor first, because I think Gog was more in tune with it than I was right away, about what's kind of cool about this one. So, Gog, would you like to go ahead?
I'll self... censor myself here, so don't worry, and I mean that in the software sense, but yeah, I think about halfway through the episode I just stared at the TV and I said, "Fuck me."
You know what I said? I said, "Holy shit." I'll cover that one too.
That was a yeah. Especially after tiptoeing, leaving myself an out, like, you know, it's looking like this is gonna happen. I want to leave myself an out in the show, so when it doesn't, I didn't say that it was going to happen. Like, you know, like, 'cause it's probably not. I said that. I was like, you know, it's inching close to this joke that we had. It's getting kind of close. They're probably not going to do it. And they did it.
Yeah.
It's done. And it just, the hilarious part was just, like I said, my original claim, you know, someone said, I believe humorously, me Payne, said Earth was Unicron, and my response was, they don't have the balls to do that.
Yeah.
And I see that they do. Well, yeah. But, well, what's funny is that I didn't really notice it on the first viewing. And then when I watched it the second time earlier today, Prime even said, we need to prevent his resurrection or whatever in order to maintain this or guarantee the safety of your planet. And I'm like, yes, that is one of the hypothetical dilemmas that I brought up earlier when I said that, you know, that would be a crazy situation if we found ourselves that we are living on Unicron and he can never really physically resurrect. And Prime, when I watched this for the first time, I thought Prime was insinuating that Unicron had basically forsaken his physical body and was nothing more than a spirit form, and I was kind of bummed about that. But when I watched it again, I think that I think I misunderstood. I think that he just said that he transcended his physical form in that he is able to operate outside of it, as we have seen in this episode. But mm-hmm. he still has the power to physically resurrect, and yeah. So I think when I rewatched it, I think that's where they're going. I'm much more comfortable with that, because the whole excitement about Unicron being the Earth is the whole dilemma of he can never resurrect, and you can never physically kill his body, because either way, so he has to kind of stay in this dormant state unless you take the route of we need to eradicate his spirit, and he's just a dead husk. But that's less exciting to me. What's more exciting is the fact that we're living on this god, and he has to stay in this kind of in-between state. And if at any point, if he leans a little too much to the left or a little too much to the right on the fully destroyed or fully resurrected meter, humanity is destroyed instantly.
Yes.
There's a lot to talk about in this episode, but, I'm very pleased. I'm very pleased.
I liked when I saw your tweet, and then it took me a few seconds to catch on, and I was like, oh, right, I know what he's talking about now. Just the tweet of, oh, dear, you know, something along those lines. Yeah, so the big topic of this episode would most definitely be, yo, Unicron. And I didn't think that they were going to have Unicron outright doing stuff this early, and then when Megatron said, I have enough of Unicron's blood to reanimate Unicron, which Twitter user Random Factor DM'd me saying that was kind of a weird quote to say, because that would be like him stabbing me to death and saying, I have enough blood to resurrect Vangelis. And I was like, yeah, it was a pretty weird. And I said to him, I just think it's hilarious how often these robots are talking about like draining blood and then using blood to et cetera, when they're all robots. It's almost like that's because, you know, it's a kid's show and robots get away with more. And this is like the most direct flaunting of that, where it's just like, yo, the robots are just going to say kill blood, kill blood a few times because they're robots. They can do that. You can rebuild.
You know what else is amazing? Unicron is voiced by John Noble.
Yes.
That is amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. And so that alone is enough for me to forgive any flaws in Unicron. Unicron is, John Noble is Unicron. That is great.
And just going back to my whole thing about Unicron doing stuff this fast, another thing that I thought was going to happen within the first minutes of this episode with Megatron saying he's going to reanimate Unicron was, oh, you know, I saw that clip on the hub where you see a Unicron. I guess Megatron is going to, like, you know, climb inside Unicron's husk and use it like a giant robot or something. Like, okay, I see how this is going to be. No! No, he goes to have an audience with Unicron. Unicron says, yo, you're small time. Let me show you how it's done. And then basically goes like, what's up, Transformers fans? It's Beast Wars Neo Unicron erupting out of the side of a mountain. Like, I am really enjoying how fast this went into what it's doing. So I guess just to continue on the vein of Unicronical topics, I had a small one myself, which was a bit of a, I want to clear up something I was trying to figure out. I was reading some ideas on this episode, and one person had a very good point that they made, which I think I can answer, but I'm not too sure, so I'd like to run it by you guys, which was, why would Unicron make 5 million small versions of himself to deal with Optimus Prime and not just make that entire expanse of mountain collapse in on Optimus Prime? The way I saw it was that Unicron does not yet have enough control over his physical body to cause a humongous amount of the Earth to move like that, although at the same time he seems to have enough control to physically manifest that many copies of himself out of the Earth. So what's your guys' take on the extent of what Unicron can do? Do you think it's still kind of in a gray zone that we're going to have to see get solidified out over the next two episodes, or do you think there's already an explanation in there somewhere? Whoever thinks they can go.
Yeah, I think that it may just be an ability.
Mm-hmm.
He can, right now, he can spawn, you know, whatever, 2.5 head taller than Prime is sized Unicrons out of rock. He's not yet upgraded to be able to do a lot of control, because if his body is at the core of Earth, then maybe that's still a bit much power for him, not fully awake, because it's not, I mean, we've seen him in smoke or lava or whatever Megatron was seeing him in.
Blood smoke.
Yeah, so it may just be he doesn't have the power yet, you know, he can talk the talk and he's conscious and alert again, but he just doesn't have the power or the ability to, you know, transform out of Earth or whatever, you know, all depending on how much of the core that our science believes is magma is actually Unicron.
Mm-hmm. I loved your science.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, I think it's something that, I mean, I've seen it debated, you know, on the internet, and I was looking at the debates and I was like, you know, this feels like something that's going to be, you know, hopefully cleared up over the next couple episodes. But that was one little, Not even a qualm, just like a thing I want to fill into my knowledge base already.
Yeah, I think it's way too early to make the decision right now.
Yeah.
If nothing else, it's just Unicron wants to destroy the last Prime with an avatar of himself. He wants his image to crush it.
I saw it entirely as a show of power, of just like, I mean, because Unicron is basically an eldritch force, so I totally saw it as, you know, an elder god going like, yo, little puny mortal, guess what? I can do anything, and I want to make you have a horrible time about this before I snuff out the last of the Primes, kind of thing. That's how I took it, anyway. Any other input on that particular ability of Unicron?
It might have been a physical limitation, too, because the reason Unicron was able to spawn there was because it was a metal-rich environment, which Okay, so aside from his soul being in the center of the earth, Unicron's flesh is also the metal in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of dug. So yeah. it might have just been a case of, well, maybe there's not enough raw material to make a bigger body there.
Mm-hmm.
He's well, not concentrated.
No, that's actually a good point, because he did specifically say that they went to an area that was rich of ore, and they tied that to Unicron's body, and it could just be that over the billions of years that his body has been there, it's maybe parts have broken off, and it's just it's the fact that his physical body is in that he's able to control it.
Mm-hmm. I hadn't considered that side of it at all. That's a very good point. That actually kind of fills in the gap enough for me at part one of three. Speaking for myself, I have another one I really want to bring up, but I'm gonna pace myself here and wait my turn. Aaron, how about you? Have you got a bit you'd like to bring up for discussion?
I kind of like, or I really like, actually, that it did what I kind of had hoped at talking our last prime time would happen, is that this episode started right where the previous episode ended.
Yes.
I mean, you got your last time on, and then it rolled into Prime staring at the sky going, you know, why is there blood of Unicron here on Earth? And then the snap to of, oh crap, Megatron standing right over top of me. Mm-hmm. And so you could easily chop that bit out, and it was just like a commercial break from the last show.
Exactly, yeah, I like that a lot.
and that's, hopefully if they keep that up and can keep their last time on's trim, mm-hmm. That'll give a good place to, you know, go back through, and when you're watching those episodes, just drop those off and be able to watch a four-episode string that's like a made-for-TV movie or something like that.
I bet you that there's a decent chance that during syndication of Season 1, maybe during the lull before Season 2, they might just show this as a three-parter rerun, like stitched together as a quote-unquote feature.
Yeah. But that really makes me excited for the next two episodes being able to do the same thing. You know, that there's not, I mean, because this episode seemed like there was quite a bit of expedition, as happens in a normal Act 1 or early Act 2, you know, explaining everything, because they started talking about Unicron, and Mika was like, Unicorn? What? Big white horse with a horn?
Huh? Oh my god, that was such a fandom yes. joke. That was such yeah, a fandom was. Joke. I yeah. love yeah. that.
I was going to bring that up as its own topic. That was great.
And so they built a lot of that in there early on, so hopefully, like I said, that just means that they're just going to keep rolling with it and make it good.
Yeah, I agree. I bet you there is a decent chance of that happening, just given the precedent set so far. Moving on, Omegas, have you got a bit you'd like to bring up?
Something I really liked in this episode was the reaction that the characters had to Unicron.
Specifically
Prime and Megatron.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, for starters, he had Megatron, who's the complete polar opposite of how he was in the G1 cartoon. You know, he's not defiant to Unicron in any way. It reminded me, and I hate to make a comparison to this, but it reminded me of how Megatron was in the movie To the Fallen.
Oh yeah, you know, I
just
see that.
Instantly yeah. subservient.
Well, that's, I had it written like to Starscream levels of subservience, because he was down on his knees, you know, please, Lord, I only exist to serve you. Maybe not the for fear of himself, the way that Starscream gets, but it was total bootlick, you know.
I think it was in part just because, you know, he was pretty much a semi-zombie robot that is entirely fueled by Unicron's blood, having visions and stuff. I think it was just a pure moment of, like, religious zealousy of, like, you know, he's basically like a Cthulhu worshiper discovering Cthulhu in a volcano.
Yeah, and then realizing that Cthulhu doesn't give a rat's ass about the ant standing before him.
Yes.
Yes.
That was so good, because I was like, oh man, here, I guess we're going to do the Galvatron thing, and Unicron's like, I got no time for some kind of little piddly thing that can't even kill a Prime. Get out. And I love that he didn't even do anything to Megatron, he just ignored him.
Yeah, right. That was so good. And then Megatron continues to try to plead his worth to Unicron, like, no, it's been my entire purpose for this entire season is to do this. Like, this is what I've been waiting for. I've seen it in my visions. It's not supposed to happen this way. Unicron's like, well, if you're so good, how come a Prime still lives?
Yeah.
And it's like, Megatron's like,
And I was expecting then for Unicron to do the whole thing of, like, I'm going to show how evil I am by badassing all over the villain of the show. But, again, what was so great is Unicron, he didn't even do a thing to Megatron. He's like, all right, Megatron now no longer exists on my radar. I'm going to go deal with that Prime. He just ignores him and leaves. I loved that. Because it would have been so, to me, cliche for Unicron to have then gone, like, you are of no use to me, thus I will kill you. And in this case, it was total god logic of, like, this dark god is like, you've not done anything useful for me, ergo, I don't really care that you exist. And he just turns around and goes to do his thing. I loved it. It kind of reminded me almost of some moments Galactus had in Marvel Comics, where, like, he takes no notice of you unless you're, you know, a direct help or hindrance to what he's doing. And Prime is clearly some kind of a direct hindrance, given the amount of attention he warranted. Stemming off that, actually. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, but that was what I was also leading into, is the reaction Prime had to Unicron.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you see that Prime is willing to negotiate before battle, no matter
even
what. Even with a dark god.
Even with a dark god. I love that.
Yes, he didn't say Unicron, he said Lord Unicron.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
He was trying to play to his ego. He was trying to say, look what all this spawned from you. You're a god to these people.
I mean, well, he kind of played to his ego, but at the same time, Prime was standing before a god, and an evil god, but a god nonetheless. And it's like, look, I'm a little transformer. You are an entity. Like, I can't stand before you. Yeah. The only thing I can do is try to plead my case.
Yes.
I didn't even see it was so much of him playing to his ego as just Prime showing humility before a force of nature.
Yeah, it was a great lack of that classic cartoon cowboy mentality. Like, and again, it was a great lack of movie Prime. Because, like, guess what movie Prime did when he saw the Fallen? He assaulted him physically and tore his face off. And the Fallen proved himself to not really be all that tough. Whereas in this thing, he's faced with Unicron himself, and he doesn't go like, Unicron, I'ma fight you! You know, he kind of goes like, yo, force of nature, let me plead a case. Eventually, you know, it came to blows because it was a case of Unicron saying, I'm going to kill you, so there was, you know, nothing left for Prime to do but to pull his guns on that avatar of Unicron. But everything with Unicron is playing out with this awesome level of awareness that I'm really enjoying. In fact, going off these guys, I wanted to bring up Ratchet's description of Unicron, where it was so funny because Ratchet basically started to go off on a really funny, like, semi-atheistic jaunt of trying to explain whether or not he believes Unicron existed. And I really enjoyed how he got into this, like, thing of, even when they're kind of discovering this thing is real, he's all like, you know, Unicron, which, you know, may or may not have existed, certainly did exist in history, but may have been interpreted differently. And I was kind of chuckling at that at that moment.
Well, if you believe in that sort of thing, I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, not saying I believe in it.
I was just waiting for someone to bring up Chaos Worshippers to just bring that full circle, but I'm guessing they shirked away from doing such a thing. I had something actually, my next point I wanted to bring up goes off of that moment where Prime was talking to Unicron, which is the nature of humanity and Unicron. Now I've seen a lot of talk, and I have my own theory on this, and I don't know, I think my theory is actually not really one that is jiving with people, at least the way I took it. A lot of people have taken it, and this may be true, a lot of people took this as humans are the offspring of Unicron. And I was immediately subscribing to that, but I really liked how Prime brought it up, and then Unicron said something that really stuck with me, where he actually just referred to them as parasites. And I thought about it, and I was like, you know, okay, Unicron was a sleeping giant, chunks of rock and metal attached themselves to his body in space, forming a planet on which life emerged. Primus directly created life on Cybertron. If Unicron didn't directly create human life and refers to them as parasites, I actually like the idea that humanity is just a complete freak accident of a parasitic creature that is living off of the husk of a dead god. Like,
yeah. The way I took it was because Prime basically referred to Unicron as humanity's progenitor, and it was I felt it was more of like, yeah, he. The fact that the planet existed for life to begin was completely due to the fact of Unicron himself being there. I didn't see it as we were like physically his children. That makes no sense, really.
Because there was
we're his children conceptually. Like it's like on the, you know, it's like, yeah, well, he didn't physically give birth to us, but it was his presence that formed the planet and then us around him. It's like Mother Earth is Unicron, almost. Yeah. Oh, I mean, in a very vague sense.
Yeah. It's not like Unicron directly, because to take some awesome wording off Twitter that I wish was, to me, a little bit more true, it's not like Unicron spawned meat robots. It's more so that we're the mutation of fleas that grew on his back while he was asleep. And I kind of like that. If that's true, I actually kind of prefer that approach, just because it so diminishes the very nature of the human race. And I don't know. I really like that Unicron immediately just wrote off the entire existence of life on this planet as a bunch of parasites growing on his back while he was asleep. Yeah,
but after he took the time to understand what Prime was saying.
Yeah.
Because Prime is like, you know, this race that spawned from your greatness. And he's like, are you calling me the progenitor of this race? Like, am I hearing you right? Prime's like, yes, you are. Parasites!
So good.
Okay, maybe, but shoot, yeah, parasites.
I just loved, specifically the term parasites. It was so perfect. I was like, this is exactly how I would have loved to write this myself. Just this... To take every convention, to throw the most conventional idea in this very unconventional situation out on the table, to have the characters lay it out, and then to have another one just shoot it down. Between this and the whole thing of Unicron just ignoring Megatron after hearing his case, enjoying this.
This was easily the greatest we've seen this Prime, I think, was in that conversation with Unicron. Yeah. Of him being humble before an evil god for the sake of an entire race, and just trying to make his case. It was so good. If for nothing else in concept alone, but I still thought the execution was very well done.
Yeah, definitely. And it's the whole way that it's being treated. The one other little notion going off that I really enjoyed a lot was the way that Unicron appeared before Prime. First, it's just a face in the side of a mountain, going like, do you recognize me? And I was like, man, I love how he is clearly an elder god just toying with the mortals.
Yeah, like, and I also got a bit of vibe from that, in that because the Earth is what formed around Unicron. In essence, it's like this husk around him. So Unicron is almost like the god of the Earth. Mm-hmm. And him appearing in like the mountains, like he is in the core of the planet and able to... Like, I don't know, just seeing the whole, like, stone face, like, it just seems like it would be, like, some old Lord of the Rings, like...
It was so supernaturally spooky, in a way.
It's supernaturally spooky, but it was just this weird connection of Unicron to the Earth. He can manifest himself in the Earth, because he basically is kind of the Earth. Yeah. Like, he is basically, like, the god of the Earth. I don't know. It was funny.
I am really into the... Yeah, I'm just into that so much. Just check. I'm using a clipboard to keep track of things because I'm professional today. Aaron, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
I really liked June's transition through the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because she started out angry as could be at Prime and the Autobots and telling the kids, "Hey, no, you got to come with me," and takes the dig at Ratchet. Of, you know, no, Raph needs to go see a real doctor, and, you know,
that's
you
a
see.
Burn.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you see Ratchet's like, no, I want to help. Oh, okay.
That's a sick burn.
You know, which again kind of goes back to us talking before of I like the fact that, Ratchet's inability to help is digging at him some. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, through the episode, you know, June loads Raph up because, Miko and Jack stand their ground, which again was another awesome thing. I'm kind of hitting stacks of things that were really great. But and then by the end, you know, Bumblebee has gone out into the terrible lightning storm with tornado action to save them, and then she realizes, hey, you know, maybe since I'm already stuck with these giant robots, maybe they've got the right idea to help out.
Especially because they're also like seemingly directed lightning strikes and tornadoes going on outside.
See, that's where at first I thought maybe there was some sort of controlling factor behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was almost a scene right out of Twister where it seems like this tornado is intentionally hunting them down.
And I was immediately starting to wonder if maybe Raph was attracting the attention of the forces of nature because he had just been purified of dark energon, and maybe there was some kind of lingering effect that was causing unconscious Unicron spasms
Maybe he wasn't totally.
Or that too, who knows? Like just curing. The fact that, because if you look at the evidence, Raph and June were the only ones in the car, and Raph kind of just had something crazy happen to him, and then when he went outside, all the lightning started to just rapidly strike near their car, and a tornado came towards them. So I was like, I wonder if maybe Raph is attracting this somehow, but...
Or the weather is whack, yo.
Yeah, the weather is also pretty whack, yo. I loved the way that they really legitimized the global nature of this with all the different reports and having Fowler come in. Like, it just felt legitimately high stakes. I was really getting hyped up. Like, you know, for a cartoon, I was getting pumped. I was like, man, like, this, you know, this is getting real, yo. Like, this stuff happening. The world is in danger, and the Autobots are going to save the world. Damn it. That was really cool. Omegas, have you got a point you'd like to bring up?
Well, next thing I was going to bring up was something covered in the middle there, because things just kind of stacked up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I really like how Jack turned around in this episode.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Because I remember him from the first episode where absolutely terrified of going against his mother in any way throughout the series, and now we've hit the point where this is important enough to him that he is now standing up for himself. He's defiant of his own mother.
Mm-hmm.
Because it almost seems like he realizes he wants to be there, even though he has no clue what he could do.
Yeah,
he just knows that this is more important.
Yeah, and just combining those two together, something I really liked about this episode was that they're like June and Jack, within the space of the opening 20 minutes of the episode, had this conflict and resolved it because there was more important stuff going on. And I really like it when shows do that. That's one of the, way back when I first saw Gurren Lagann, that's one of the things I gave it huge esteem for, was having Simon's, you know, angst arc begin and end within 3 episodes, when I was expecting it to kind of drag the show down for like 10 episodes. And in this one, I was like, oh man, now June's going to be an antagonist for the next one. Oh no, wait, it's all solved. Okay, good. Like, yeah, I love it when it's tight.
Yeah, because that's something that Prime has done from the beginning, is that there's these things that you know should happen, but it doesn't drag them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree completely. I think with Jack, this was a great counterpoint to the Jack we saw in the miniseries, because the Jack in the miniseries says, look, this is way too big for me. It's above my head. Like, yeah, I could go hang out with these robots, but it's dangerous. This is not for me. There's nothing I'm going to do here except for get myself hurt and stare. And now it's like, well, the entire fate of mankind might be at stake. I can't just go home and do homework. Like, knowing that this is going on
can't
in the world around me. And it's like seeing that
thumbs.
Transition was this. I think it's a really good character moment for Jack, even though it was kind of understated. There's a lot of growth there.
Yeah, and what I really liked about it was the conflict with June, because you think about it, this is the mother watching her son go off into these big battles with gigantic alien robots. This is the reaction I was expecting to her to have, you know, the very episode after she found out about all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only when one of them gets hurt does the motherly instinct kick in and override any, well, the world is about to implode kind of logic that should be going on.
Well, she had a bit of that herself, because she was like, you know, that the whole episode where we kind of made fun of her saying that she wore high heels for Prime, that was still she was just almost as fascinated with them as the kids. Like, she was coming and hanging out like, these are alien robots. Like, I want to hang out with them herself. And it was more of an adult take on it, but I think she was as taken with them as the kids were, and at least in awe of them. Mm-hmm. And then exactly what you said, once one of the kids gets hurt, and she's like, you know, this is not a place for kids, and it's my role as an adult here to make sure that no one dies, because one almost did. And the other people's families might not be involved or even know what's going on. And so me being the only adult here, I kind of have to take responsibility for this. And yeah, then she peeked her head outside the window and said, "Ah, never mind. I take it back."
the thing that that really sold me on that whole scene, like especially the main conflict of it, was it immediately felt like the whole thing of like, "Hey, okay, listen, this isn't a cartoon anymore. This kid got hurt. I'm taking him home." Like it almost felt like maybe for a moment this really ironic, you know, darkly funny thing of like, "Hey, listen, cartoon characters, I'm taking him back to the real world." But the way that Optimus Prime stood up and kind of like the stuff he said to her, and then when I looked at that as he was saying it, and because of the way it was done, it sold me on the fact like she is still talking to giant robots as the world is ending, and I was like, suddenly this thing goes from being this sort of ironic thing of like, "Hey, I'm pulling the kid out of the cartoon show," to like, "No, this actually is more, this feels way more real stakes now," because Prime is like, you know, we did get Raph hurt, and we're not going to argue you to keep him here because, yeah, hey, the whole planet might explode. We can't fight over this.
June did nothing wrong.
No.
She was totally trying to save children in the midst of a global war, and I don't think that she had any wrongdoing whatsoever. She was doing exactly what she thought was right, and guess what? It was probably exactly what's right, because I could see maybe Jack as an adult being able to do something, but I mean, certainly Raph could be written in there somewhere, but Raph has done very little since his magic hacking in the beginning other than almost get himself killed now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just that whole scene, it started off in this way which felt almost a little uncomfortable, but then it pushed it so far it became like some real decent, serious drama, I thought, just at least for a couple minutes. And I really enjoyed how it played out. It again, really helped make this feel like there was some goddamn stakes going on in this episode. And going off that, Gog, have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
Let me look at my list here. I got a few. I'll bring up another Unicron one. Right. It almost seems like Unicron doesn't have an alt mode. Like it's kind of the movie take on it where the original Transformers didn't necessarily transform.
Mm-hmm.
Except for his hands.
Yeah.
So, I'm not really sure how I feel about his arms. I mean, I guess it kind of gives him like the prehistoric ancient look. I was very pleased when he was able to pull back the weird stone spiky sandspur mace and have actual hands pop out.
Yeah.
But it almost felt like they were playing on the whole Unicron is a planet thing by, we're not going to actually give him a transforming alt mode into the planet. We're just going to make him basically the life force of the planet or the core of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to be more, he's a planet in the metaphorical sense than he is actually a giant transforming planet.
Yeah. Cause I remember that, like, that's one of that was such a cool thing about the movie, but also one of the things that it almost felt like the post movie material had to spend so much time justifying as to like, now that you've thought about it, why exactly would a dark god assume the form of a planet? And then, you know, there's all these different explanations for it after the fact. And, you know, the only thing that bums me out about him not having an immediate alt mode is it makes it less obvious to me about whether or not he'll actually have a toy. Because there's no obvious alt mode for him to turn into, unless, you know, they just do him Rock Lord style and have him just fold up into a ball with lots of spikes on it. But yeah, I think the arm spike thing also was in part a reference to the old 86 design, because the 86 design had a lot of spikes on the forearms, just not nearly as pronounced.
Yeah.
There was a lot of really cool homaging in the Unicron design. Like, as I mentioned right off the bat, he totally has the silhouette of the Beast Wars Neo Unicron toy that never happened.
Yeah.
The big shoulders.
Yeah, and that was a really cool little fan nod, I thought. Like, there's no way that they would just go like, "Hey, it would be cool to have giant shoulder spikes." Like, I am really sure that was another neat little homage in there. Like, between that and he has the wings, not nearly as huge as we are used to, but in the shots where you can see his back, he has these bony, like, you know, demon skeleton wings sticking off his back. He basically has a skull for a chest. A really cool design, and I love how long and pointy the horns are.
Yeah, it's a very well-thought-out Unicron, because it does get in all the tropes you come to expect, whether those shoulder spikes come from Neo or Armada, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's enough there to... This is definitely Unicron.
Even as the six-pack.
Yeah, but to come up with this concept of him, that he's the essence of a planet rather than a physical planet, takes away all those limitations of how do you CG in something that freaking big compared to your other computer models.
Oh, absolutely. And,
yeah,
and
yeah, that's a good point.
And it covers so many of those easy, like, oh, this is just getting silly moments, as I said, of like, why would a giant robot god turn into a giant planet? That's just dumb.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, I'm not going to say it's dumb. I mean, granted, if you dissect it, it gets pretty cheesy, but this really is like, all these steps really legitimize Unicron as a dark god and not just a giant transformer. That might be regarded as a god.
Yeah, his portrayal comes across in a way bigger than the original Unicron did, but he's so much more approachable and usable in this compact design now.
Mm-hmm. And this whole thing of the way they're making him work, like, and I'm not meaning to talk smack on older Unicrons, but this is like a Unicron that, as someone who went from loving Unicron to being sick of him in the space of about a year during the Unicron trilogy, I feel like I can take this Unicron really damn seriously, and I hope this is a sign of things to come with this whole 13 unifying fiction that Hasbro has been talking about for the last couple years. Like, if they can make stuff feel this legit and this high stakes, I am all for that. Absolutely. I don't want to pop open the 13 quite yet, because that's a big talk, and I think we have a lot more grounded talk we can do before we you know, open up that receptacle. Just a small one from me, on the topic of action sequences. There were two, I think, fantastic action sequences outside of the stakes of the actual episode. I was really into that opening sequence when the Autobots come to basically rescue Optimus Prime, because Megatron was all over them, almost on a horror movie level, when he's, like, running towards the space bridge gate, or the ground bridge gate, and almost making it through, or the whole time he's doing that, and Bulkhead is holding him back. I was just sitting there chewing my knuckle, going, like, oh man, this feels like a time that they might just decide to have Bulkhead get stabbed through the face. Like, I was actually pretty worried for the characters, because Megatron was so pumped up. I was getting worried that he might take one of them out as they're rescuing Optimus Prime to add, you know, to some, maybe some ham-fisted levity to this, or brevity to the situation. But brevity? More like weight. I'm picking my words wrong. But that one and the sequence of Bumblebee rescuing Raph and June from the tornado, specifically the lighting of him driving up and transforming with his headlights illuminating the rest of his body in the darkness of the storm. Those were two moments which just, they felt really, really cool, really cinematic, really just on the ball, and once again upped, I think, the animation ante a little bit, and just, you know, once again, Prime made me go like, oh man, this action sequence is really cool! Like, I am loving that Prime is managing to stay engaging with a lot of its action animation, and definitely those two sequences, I think, just, they gripped me really well. In this episode. I don't know. How do you guys feel about those?
I actually was kind of thinking the other way. It looked like Bulkhead was doing some putting some serious hurt on Megatron, because Megatron was all like energy lines with Dark Energon, and Prime at that point was getting more than he was giving, and I don't know how much of that was the surprise of, oh, ground bridge, giant green wrecking ball.
Well, that's why I was worried.
Because he was going toe-to-toe, and yeah, I could see that, but then the other thing that goes back to the thought of, imagine, so, you know, Ratchet on the artificial Energon was going pretty serious. Imagine as, you know, as we kind of said, you know, look, this is emergency situation. Bulkheads already are big bad. Prime's in trouble. Here, Bulky, take a shot of this. And
you've just compromised your moral compass, Aaron.
Well,
what are you doing?
You know, but is it worth it to save the last? What we find out is the last Prime.
Absolutely not. It's better to die.
The reason why I was worried about Bulkhead, aside from the idea of maybe he was, you know, hopped up on synth N, which I still really hate as a term, was because to me, one of the writing tropes of a sudden character, like something that makes me suddenly start to foresee a sudden character death, is when a lower tier character, very very broadly speaking, lower tier character, because he's not Optimus Prime. When one of those characters starts to get the upper hand over the main villain, I have found in many fictions that often leads to them going like yeah, and then getting stabbed through the chest. So I was a little bit worried that was where we were going with that action sequence.
Well, one thing I liked about it too is it was going off of what we said last week about Prime saying, "Okay, this is it. I'm going to take Megatron down. It's just going to be me and him." It's like, "Well, did you really think that through, Prime? Because any given day, anybody could win a fight. It's nothing set in stone, and if Megatron's really as powerful as you give him credit for, then maybe it's not a good idea, because what if he takes you out? And if it wasn't for Bulkhead basically disobeying orders and coming in and saving him at the last minute, we wouldn't have an Optimus Prime right now in the show." Mm-hmm. So it's just, especially like the kind of humility on his face when he's basically carried in through the ground bridge, sat down, he can hardly even stand up on his own. June is scolding him, and he just looks defeated, like, wow, I've made some pretty bad choices lately. So again, I'm not trying to be too harsh on Prime, but it was, I think from his perspective too, it was like, yeah, I didn't really think this out, because I made this huge final stand against Megatron one-on-one, told nobody not to fight me or not to follow me. If they had listened to me, I'd be dead. I almost got a child dead. Like, yeah, I should probably take a step back and take a more outside look at what's going on in the situation right now.
Well, you know what's great is that you can look at this, you can look at all these flaws in this Optimus Prime, but they don't feel like they're non-fictional flaws. It feels all very intentionally written, and in a way where, you totally can go like, Prime, you screwed up, but I kind of still feel bad for you, and I'm still on your side because of the way he's played. Like, this Prime is very much, he comes across as the Prime who's been the superhero Optimus Prime for so long that at this point we're seeing him, starting to hit his worst when he's everything is coming down and he's starting to realize some of the long-term ramifications of things that have gone on. And it's done in a way that I feel is really, like I said this word before, it's very engaging, I find. It's not like, oh, Prime, you idiot, you should have killed Megatron, you idiot, you should have brought your troops. It's more like, Prime, you didn't bring your troops, you screwed up, but we can see it in your face that you know that. Thus, the fiction knows that, which I think is the important thing. It doesn't feel like the writers are expecting us to think Prime is still flawless and incapable of error, which I'm liking. It's a very more understated way of having a faulted Optimus Prime rather than kind of an overstated, like, why does everything I do go wrong? I'm going to lock myself in a holding cell for 3 issues of a comic book.
Oh, it was longer than that.
I know. anyway, Aaron, have you got a talking point you'd like to bring up?
Let's hit. Fowler showing up again in the episode and a couple of really good Ernie Hudson moments.
Yes.
Really the one that sticks in my mind is the, when he storms onto the base and he's, don't blow any smoke up my, Miss Darby.
That was lovely. And
hi.
And I just want to throw out there, if anyone is wondering how Fowler knows June Darby, all is explained in the deleted scene that was performed at BotCon 2011 script reading. Does anyone remember that? Or am I the only one who?
If only we could,
only we could reference that with a video clip, that would be fantastic. There was basically at BotCon, they performed an episode, and in that episode, there was a moment where Fowler ends up on the phone with June Darby and is trying to convince her that he is in fact from some kind of, what was it, like a cleaning service or something like that, and she uses call display to call him back and ask why he's on a government number, and that is the scene basically. Which never appeared in the show, as far as I can recall.
Yeah.
I was happy that Fowler showed up, because it really also, it added to the feeling that we're coming down to the end game, because all the characters are getting together, and they're all, every character that should be involved is getting involved. The characters like Wheeljack's off-world, so, there's a reason why he's not here right now. But if Fowler had never been involved up in this episode, it would have started to get very questionable, because you're like, when the whole world is coming apart, why would Fowler not be saying anything? So it's... it's great that they're covering the bases of having the cast, in, you know, get in place where they should be. Most definitely. Gog, have you got a point you'd like to bring up?
Yeah. Still got a few good ones. Let's go back to Megatron. One thing that I thought was cool in this episode was Arachnid goes to Megatron to basically, I'm not sure if it's in character for her or not. I didn't think about that until just now, but basically pleads to Megatron that, look, our cargo hold is full of dark energon. We've got as much as we can carry, and the troops have grown weary from its long exposure. Mm-hmm. Megatron kind of ponders for a minute and see, he says, but yet I'm growing stronger. And I almost expected him to say, whatever, it's making me stronger, continue until I say it's over. And instead he goes, okay, fine. I can't remember the exact line, but he basically like, I'll contact you after I'm done with my audience with Unicron. And then you see the ship flying away as Megatron flies out of it in jet mode to go speak to Unicron. And it's total, like, I was like, oh wow, like, Megatron wasn't a total douchebag to his troops. Like, Arachnid said, look,
yeah,
our troops are growing weary. The exposure to this stuff is, it's taking a toll on them. Megatron's like, all right, fine, fly away, go take a break. I'm gonna do my own thing for a while. I'll call you when I'm done. And I was like, yeah. Oh, and that was very interesting to me. Because he's at the height of his religious fanaticism, even to the point to where he's about to go address his god. But he's also so high on power. He's now glowing from the seams with the dark energon. He's bragging that even though it's making his troops weaker, it's making him grow stronger. And yet he still allows them to go take a break. I don't know. It was probably just an easy way for the writers to let all the cast go and do their own thing while Megatron talked to Unicron. But I still thought that was interesting, given he was at the apex of his enthusiasm for the power of dark energon and him and his growing display of power.
I think it might be one part that, but also one part them not forgetting what dark energon's effects were on characters in the opening five-parter. There was a nice bit of world science continuity there of like, by the way, dark energon is technically a deadly radioactive substance to Transformers, in long-term exposure or direct exposure. So I kind of like that. Omegas, how about you? Have you got another point you'd like to bring up?
There was something going on through the whole episode that I really liked, which was this really well-written conveyance of fear through the entire episode. Because there's this one moment where, you know, Miko's going, well, he just woke up. What does he do? Stretch out and the earth blows up and everyone goes dead silent.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't know, do you? You could tell everyone is clueless, have no idea what's going to happen. Everyone is scared of, you know, Unicron waking up. You could see it in maybe a little bit in Megatron, mm-hmm. when he is humbling himself. You know, and there's even a sense in Optimus where he's facing this down, but you know he is still avoiding the wrath of the god if he can.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He doesn't assume he can just beat up Unicron and drive him away or anything.
I mean, that's one of the things I liked was just the lack of knowledge on their part, because, you know, they ask, when June asks, well, you don't know how to stop this, do you? And it's like, well, no, the prophecy doesn't say anything about that. You know, it's always the kind of trope is, okay, we know what the prophecy is, and conveniently, here's the way to fix
and
it.
So and so the this, hero rose from the red sports car kind of thing. And,
right. And, yeah, and this is like, well, you know, the prophecy says bad stuff's going down. Bad stuff's going down.
Yeah. You expect something like a shuttle to crash in the next episode, and someone comes out going, "Hi, I'm Rodimus. What'd I miss?"
Yeah, like you are the red sports car deemed in the prophecy. Actually, just to play off of a post I saw in our thread, Wraithnor, listener to the podcast, mentioned that he himself is, you know, a little bit tired of the prophecy trope. As am I myself. Like whenever the word prophecy comes up, my knee jerk reaction is to just turn to my friend who I'm watching a movie with and go like, "The prophecy says the chosen one will," you know, because that's how it tends to go. But You know, props to this. They're using a prophecy, but they did, at least so far, leave out the full prophecy trope, which is it'll tell of a bad coming and then a really poorly veiled way to get out of it. And in this case, the prophecy doesn't tell you nothing about how to get out of it. It's just like, no, you are all going to die. The end.
One thing, I was the main spokesperson against the prophecy last week, but I will say one thing in favor of it that happened in this episode was they stated that it was basically Unicron had become trapped in the debris of the Earth, and it was the magnetic alignment of all those planets which was enough to stir him.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And it was they actually gave a physical reason for why this, instead of it just being like, when the clock strikes one, the wolf will howl and all hell will break loose in the village. It was no, it's like they actually gave a description. And it may even be because you hear in the news broadcast in the background, they say, no one knows why these natural disasters are happening. It may be because of the planetary alignment. And that might even be what's causing a lot of the weather stuff. Mm-hmm. So it might not even necessarily be Unicron himself, but they're both being caused from both of those things are happening for the same reason, in that the same stimulus, in that all these planets are lined up. It's causing this strange magnetic phenomenon that obviously hasn't been seen in billions of years, because that's how long Unicron has been inside the Earth, or even before it. So this is the first time anything like this has happened, and it's, number one, it's enough to stir him from the center of the Earth, and if that's the case, then there's a pretty fair chance that it may cause some winds to blow a little crazy on the exterior.
Yeah, definitely. I really like the that little addition of the electromagnetic thing, and that, you know, that always that kind of proves the point that at the end of the day, no matter how much you want to pick an episode apart, if it's in a multi-parter, at the end of the day, you always got to wait till the multi-parter's over to drop full judgment, because they might have just decided not to mention something because they're saving it for part two. And what's really
it's a case where the technobabble can be good enough that it's an excuse, not a validation.
Yeah,
if that makes sense, where it's not, you know, they're not just trying to say, "Oh crap, we need a reason."
Oh
why,
right, but well, because of this, you know.
Because of the gravitons. And it's something that even in basic quasi science, you know, and like the gut feel of science, well, yeah, maybe, you know, 40 some odd planets across the universe or the galaxy or whatever getting lined up, maybe that could, and it's enough of that it's not complete hokum. Yeah. You know,
yeah, there's some vague grounding in there.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's definitely vague, but still, it's better than nothing, and it is certainly better than leaving it at, no, the prophecy said so. You know,
right.
Anyway, I still kind of want to hold off of covering the 13 until we've covered everything else, because I think the 13 is a really nice place to end cap this one. Gog, any other talking points on your end?
I guess it could kind of vaguely relate to the 13, but not really. At least not how I meant to bring it up, but it was the whole Primes and Primus thing. Unicron basically referring to Prime as a servant of Primus and could even feel him. Mm-hmm. So I'm still a little conflicted as far as, or I don't understand like what the essence of a Prime is supposed to be, because it feels like they made this effort to say that, you know, Optimus wasn't always a Prime. He was a young guy like Jack, maybe a little unsure of himself, and found his way and eventually became a good leader and was eventually made a Prime. But Unicron seems to be able to feel him as if there's something physically in his DNA, his robot's DNA, that somehow makes him a Prime on this atomic level.
I've kind of got an idea of what that might be, because I had the same thoughts for a little bit. Was that maybe it is some artifact? Because have they actually talked about like a Matrix of Leadership?
I was about to say, the Matrix of Leadership, as far as I know, has never been mentioned in Prime. However, the San Diego Comic-Con Prime, the artwork on his box is this Prime holding up a Matrix of Leadership. Right. And I know that might just be box art, but at the same time, I feel like that's something that
Oh, man. You might be onto something here, because what is the ultimate weapon against Unicron?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, I get you.
So, because I was thinking that too, and I'm thinking, well, you know, if he's made, maybe it's just that object that, you know, we said we're not going to quite talk about primes, but, or the 13, but, you know, we know that Prima or whoever had the Matrix sword that had, you know, the Matrix of Leadership as the crossguard. Maybe that is the artifact that gets handed down. And so there's still a bit of that original 13, those original primes hanging around, be it in bling form, but it's still enough to call to Unicron, you know, that old enemy, and having your Eldritch God artifact sniffing powers, you know, he can feel that bad part, to him at least, is still floating around.
And it definitely, if this does relate to the Matrix in Prime, and if the Prime version of the Matrix is the thing that can stop Unicron, that also, to me, makes a little bit more of a legitimate epic sense than just, it's a crystal full of knowledge, and apparently Unicron is anti-knowledge and thus will explode when he comes in contact with it. In this case, it would be more like, if this is something that is something that makes him, if you have this and you think, and it makes Unicron say you're a prime, maybe that you know, that connection is something that I find a little bit more legitimate than just, it's the Matrix of Leadership full of knowledge and it makes Unicron blow up. Like in this case, it's just a little, if this is even what happens, then this is what'll join it together. And just for reference for our listeners, as far as I know, none of us are referencing any kind of advanced spoilers, because I have been staying the hell away from the prime form.
Ditto.
As this has been airing, because these episodes have been advance airing in Singapore, and much like the Dubai animated episodes, apparently people are recording the flippin' episodes with their cell phones and posting jank-ass clips on YouTube, and for some reason people think that's an awesome thing to watch. please don't. No. You want to know a great way to ruin a show for yourself? To watch silent clips of it that were recorded with a cell phone off a TV. Just wait for the episodes to air properly. Dark Prime will have an HDN code up that night, most probably. Just, you know, oh man, I hate this risk that's going on, you know? But yeah, we are not, as far as I know, we're not referencing any of that stuff. So this is all pure speculation, based on deduction and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even with some of our other ideas seemingly floating true, it definitely makes me feel more and more that the guys that are doing the writing and dealing with this stuff are deep fans of much of Transformers lore, and not some of the, you know, okay, well, we got to have the big bad. Who's the bigger bad than Megatron?
Look it up in the book.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
go call one of those Transformer peoples over in Rhode Island to tell us who's meaner than Megatron.
Even if these aren't outright, you know, hardcore fans writing it, clearly they are showing a respect for the material they're working from, and they're trying to base stuff off that material in a way that is engaging. Like this is a very weak parallel, but, you know, much like the new Thundercats cartoon is taking the essence of old Thundercats lore and then reworking it in a way that is a little bit more engaging than the 80s cartoon. This is showing, you know, to me, at least a similar sort of respect for the story concepts. They want to tell an effective story, but they're drawing off of existing concepts, not out of let's pull open the book, but out of, you know, a logical nature.
Yeah,
rather than
it's definitely a taking the well, it's a little bit like what High Moon Studios talked about with their stuff, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Taking what's existing there and using that in the story rather than trying to come up with our own stuff. And you know, granted, you know, they took some things for High Moon, you know, oh my god, there's aerial bots, but Combiners didn't show up till later. Well, all right, but, you know, flying Autobots, aerial bots, you know, that's the sort of thing that even if it's not perfect canon with something, it shows better.
Rather than calling them the Jetatrons.
Right. Yeah. Right. It shows, I'm trying to think of the best word that I'm looking for here, but it shows more thought into the real process of the fandom and of the existing product than just be like, yeah, we need Jetatrons.
Well, and as an example, a thoughtless thing would have been to call the flying Autobots aerial bots and then include Powerglide among their ranks. But yeah. they not only called them aerial bots, they also named them after aerial bots, not just flying Autobots. Like that's the distinction I draw between.
And then even Silverbolt had a thing for heights, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like to me, that's the distinction between we're drawing names that match up in the book, and we're actually going to look into what syncs up with the storytelling compared to the source material.
Right, and the fact that they're doing this way deep on Prime when it's kind of still a bit like animated, and they didn't have to because they are in their own world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to follow G1, but the fact that they're dovetailing in concepts that are from the 80s and worked very well then and, you know, appear again to be working very well now, it's definitely a compliment to their craft.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Just to pull some more topics. Omegas, have you got any other talking points left?
There is a little bit of continuity here because we saw the core of Primus for mm-hmm. the first time. And it matches the War for Cybertron design dead on.
I did not know that.
Oh, I didn't even notice that, yeah.
I completely blanked on that. Oh, man. I mean, maybe it's shared art style, but still. Is that the first real absolute link we've had between the two things so far?
I think so. I mean, it's the first thing that hasn't conflicted with each other.
It's the first thing that hasn't been, like, called severely into question that might link them together, anyway.
Yeah, because it's the same multi-ring design, the little lights around the outside, the lines going off the circle, the tentacles coming off, or the cables coming off.
Oh, man. Okay.
But I liked Prime's reaction, because somebody said, do you mean that there's a giant robot in the core of a planet? And Prime's like, well, it's not without precedent.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Of course. Should read our books sometime. I had no idea that synchronized up. I think you have actually also covered, thankfully, a really big I'm surprised you didn't notice that might have come up after the episode was done. So many thanks for that.
Hooray.
Yeah, and I had no idea. That's really cool. And Aaron, have you got any talking points left? Because I think I might just bring up the 13 after messing.
Soundwave continue to be super creepers.
Oh, that's what I forgot to mention. Yeah, coming off of Omega's talking about the kind of scary nature. I loved that whole let's just line up this data, and then it's a friggin' heartbeat, and it's like
right, it's a heartbeat, and then it was almost like a telltale heart thing out of Megatron.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Autobots looking at that and getting wide-eyed like, oh, crap, that, you know, this means something. And then
the Megatron's like, I hear it in my Soundwave. Head.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, I hear it in my head. He's like, Soundwave, stop it. And Soundwave keeps pumping it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, Soundwave, stop. And you can still see the EKG thing on Soundwave's face going, ooh, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, ooh. He's like, stop it, Soundwave. And Soundwave just goes, ooh, 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 ooh. He's like, you will hear it.
And not to continue to do my little white knighting for Soundwave, but that immediately makes me start coming up with motivations for continuing to play that and perhaps motivations for his devotion to Megatron this whole time. Who knows? Maybe Soundwave is more interested in seeing Unicron be resurrected than anything else. I am completely speculating, but...
That would be crazy.
If it was going that deep. Like, what if, like, you know, I'm going to jump back to our first prime time, but, like, wouldn't it be neat if maybe this is that thing I was hoping for this whole time, like, the reason for Soundwave to be such a background player? I don't know. Certainly not going to excuse the lack of Soundwave for much of the series, but maybe it'll happen. Maybe now that I've said it, it's not going to happen. I don't know. Anyway, come on, Soundwave. We're pulling for you here. I still love you. Let's talk about the 13. I want to just throw thanks out to K-Mac, who sent me a picture off of... I think either he put it together or he grabbed it for us. I'm not sure. But it's all three of the fully assembled panning shots of the 13, which are beautiful. It's got each design... There are distinct designs between these three splash images. It's got them numbered and speculations as to their identities added in. There's a couple of them which I think are pretty spot on. You know, easily enough, Prima, or Prima, I'm not sure how we're supposed to say that. I think it was Prima at the panel. Prima, because there is a recurring design, and in the image where all of the 13 are running forward, one of the recurring designs is pointing forward with a sword, and we do know that Prima's artifact is a sword with the Matrix in its guard. So, That seems pretty likely. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. There's one of the 13 who's perpetually in an energy orb. K-Max Image speculates it might be the Minicon 13. I actually think that's pretty good guess, because I believe it was stated that there is one of the 13 is supposed to be the
prototypical.
Prototypical. I forgot my English. The prototypical Minicon. Much like there is also a female one and a beast one. Speaking of which, there is a very beast-like one in here as well. He's got wings, I think. Very centaur kind of look as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because one of them shows him with, like, Archangel from Marvel wings. And then they have that's the number 5, if this image gets linked. And then he's in the background of, like, the looking down into probably, like, the Primus Pit.
Oh, I see that. Yeah, he's got the centaur legs.
He's got centaur legs, where he's got what appears to be robo horsey stuff hanging off his backside.
Yeah, these designs, before we recorded GOG, I believe you're the one who said it, like, these were things that looked totally generic, but when you get an image like this that shows you the recurring bits and pieces of design work between all of these things, and knowing what we know of the two times we've had panels talking about the 13, there's a lot of, to me, somewhat exciting stuff in here, which, because I was still on kind of thinking, like, man, this 13 thing might not happen. And this is the, like, aside from the fact that Prime kind of got my attention when he just went right into talking about the mythology of the Transformers in Prime out of nowhere, I was like, oh my god, okay, so there is mythology here. And he brings up the 13, and then seeing this image, I'm like, I think this is something that is legitimately going to happen. It is definitely the long-term project that they were hoping to do.
One interesting thing, too, is, going by this picture, because I only saw this minutes before we started recording, with it numbered out and everything, is at any given time, they're only showing 12. So there is a 13th missing, and we have heard, I believe it was Bulkhead a few episodes ago, make a joke about the Fallen. They said that after after the 13 had fought Unicron, he was never seen again, but the fact that when it shows the 13 fighting Unicron, that there's only 12 of them, shows that by the time that this fight that was very basically portrayed on purpose, no doubt, but there is lots of hints there that Megatronus, or whatever you want to call him, the Fallen, had already chosen his side of allegiance to Unicron. It's just a possibility, but I noticed in the picture, because they specifically say on here that he's unseen. So
one of the things we were told is Megatronus does eventually become the Fallen. Some of the other really interesting things in here, we can see, I believe, Solus Prime is what this one says. It's the dude who basically has the Magnus Hammer, which I mistakenly identified as a Matrix Hammer, which would be amusing because you'd be bludgeoning a dude with the Matrix of Leadership. There's also a Vector Prime, which I think we were all staring at. Then we saw the chest, and you can see the Vector Prime chest design on one of them very clearly. Also, Nexus Prime, I'd forgotten he's supposed to be one of the 13, and I definitely do see the head design resembling the club toy combiner head, between the visor and the certain array of fins popping up off of it. It's very, to me, very exciting stuff to look at, because I think this is, like, I mean, those novels, the second novel, I think is either just come out or is on its way to coming out.
I think it's out today.
Yeah, and in those novels, as far as I know, were the closest thing to anything about the 13, and I hate to be, you know, cynical, but generally when I hear Transformers novels, no matter what their quality is, I tend to think that's probably going to be the first thing that gets tabled and set aside continuity-wise when something more lucrative comes up. So to see the 13 manifest in a television show, really gets me pumped up, because I'm like, all right, this to me seems like something that will really happen. And it's not just going to be what I had anticipated, sadly, which was that it was going to be a really cool project that we would see the aborted results of someday in an art book.
Yeah, that's one thing I was just sitting here thinking just now of a crazy way that I could see the next season going that is so far future looking that I almost don't want to talk about of it becoming like a you got to get all of the artifacts to destroy Unicron for good.
Yeah, who knows?
Type of deal. And I'm just sitting here going, that could be so cool, and yet, Pokemon. But well, they've not been yet.
Collecting MacGuffins, you know, I mean, it would be very
looking
cartoon.
Looking for O-parts.
Yeah, looking for O-parts, trying to assemble the planet keys. I mean, it would be very tropey, but then again, if you were going to tell me last year that there's a good chance the second season of the new Transformers cartoon was going to be all about the original 13, I would have said, no, you see, that's never going to flesh out because that's not marketable. I'm really impressed that they are actually going through with this. And even if the next season becomes a MacGuffin-y artifact search, if that means tons more visually assisted, you know, TV media lore on the original 13, I'd be like, I think I'm actually okay with that. I don't know. It's just such a level of world building that I'm so happy they're actually, at least in this level, following through with. I am really, really, really happy about this.
Just to clarify real quick, because I can already sense somebody going for the thread right now.
Oh.
Solus Prime is the female of the 13.
Ah.
Which is actually very easy to see in the HD close-up of her.
Why did I forget that was... Because I was trying to remember the name of the female one, and I couldn't remember...
Oh, I thought you knew that when you were talking about it.
I just said Solus Prime.
They showed her at BotCon this year for the first time.
I forgot that was her name. I think because
nobody had any idea how to pronounce it because it was just in text or something, right?
Something like that, yeah.
So is that the one?
Between that and I was making a joke about that in a review I did of a Gundam, I think I messed up my own archive knowledge of that stuff. Also, really evil-looking 13, who I agree is most probably the Liege Maximo. I'm kind of liking getting to see a look at him as well. At first, I thought he was Megatronus until I saw the non-front profile shots, where there's clearly not... like I sort of remember what Megatronus looked like in the artwork, and the middle of these three shots, where you see the front shots of them, I thought that was Megatronus, but definitely the side shots that... does not look as Megatronus as I remember. So that would be kind of cool if we're getting our first glimpse of the now fully canonical Liege Maximo. This is really cool stuff.
I love how much speculation there is here, because there's also Amalgamus Prime, which, you know, right now the wiki is identifying him as the giant horned one that you can see in the big group shot. Because he does have that Loki vibe.
I suppose, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, there's this, like... I mean, we've had, like, years of teasers for the 13, and now to see, you know, 12 of the 13 finally fleshed out in a cartoon.
We've had years of teasers, and we'd only seen, like, a handful of them. And so to have all their designs, at least in silhouette, you know, and maybe in a prime aesthetic, still, their designs dumped on us like this, like...
Yeah,
it's
well,
really
that was
neat.
Always, you know, at those panels, they always said, yeah, we know who they all are, and we have artwork on them all. Here, we're going to show you one.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's suddenly like, here's most of them, and the one who's not here, you might have already seen twice anyway. And it's like, oh man, okay. Like, the one in the energy ball really intrigues me. I really hope that is the Minicon 13, because that's a really cool take on that concept. And having, you know, a winged centaur... 13 as the prototypical beast transformer. That's freaking cool too. I don't know. I'm just really jazzed by the prospects of this, which I hope to all heck get followed through on.
Yes. That I think would be one of the biggest letdowns for me is knowing the stuff that's behind this. You know, and granted, the kids at home don't know. And
at least two years, if not more, of development have gone into
having,
these characters.
Yeah, and having this development and teasing at BotCon just be like, it looked pretty.
Yeah, it would just be a bummer if this whole thing, because I was so cynically sure this thing could not possibly make it to TV, and now that it has, I will be, you know, kind of crushed if it doesn't get beyond this, and I'm sure it will at this point. Now that they've appeared in the effing TV show, I'm sure it will. Anyway, any other thoughts on the 13? I mean, I've been gushing for the last like 3 hours about them, so
and rightly so.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm still not sure if I'm sold on the idea. It's really going to depend on the execution. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the thing of the 13 has been around for, you know, years now, and we've never really had them fleshed out, and only a handful of their members have ever really been canonized, and we've gotten their names, and certainly the last couple BotCons where they've shown this art and story plot points that they've been hinting at with the BotCons have helped flesh that stuff out a bit, but it's like we'll see. It's I don't know. I think it's really going to depend on the execution, what they do with it. I'm not sure about the whole. There's 13 types of Transformers, and each one of them has like its own patriarch. I'm still not sure if I really like that idea yet, and of course the whole like bringing in the Star Saber from what was it, Armada, and mm-hmm. like the whole Star Saber is a sword versus an awesome character. I just don't. I mean, like that sort of thing was like, yeah. I mean, Aaron Archer, he started his Transformers work, as far as I remember, on Armada, mm-hmm. and so he's kind of referencing back to that. But it's also kind of an area of Transformers that's some of my least favorite. So I don't know. And this is just going back to my initial thoughts on some of this stuff as of, you know, two BotCons ago. And now that that's coming in, sure, some of that kind of stuff may never even be referenced. And certainly, like, the sword with the Matrix in the hilt that idea is kind of cool. But it's also, like, a lot of this stuff is cool when you look at it from a mythical point of view. And I think the reason why a lot of fans have been so fascinated with the 13 is how little we know. And even from a fictional standpoint, it's like, you know, no one really understands that much other than there is a legend where the original members of our race were created, and there was this epic, like almost mythical battle. It's like the Greeks talking about the Greek gods on Mount Olympus and all the stuff. And so it's almost like that. And certainly we haven't gotten beyond that yet at all. It's just, I'm a little iffy because once there's something that can be a clip on YouTube and watched over and over again, the mythical magic is kind of lost because it's now a character right. talking and you see it and you see it again and you see it again. And then the kind of mystery is gone from it. So I don't know. I'm definitely not being critical. I think what we've seen so far has been really cool. It's just, I hope that they don't screw it up, and I don't know if there's any way that they can do it that's going to make everybody happy. And of course, that's a general rule in the fandom as a whole.
Yeah,
it's just there's a lot of people that feel very strongly about this, the whole concept of the 13, and there's a lot of people that love what they're doing and going into this stuff and the artwork and everything. There's also a lot of people that really hate it. So I don't know if they can win either way with it. I just hope it's done tastefully and they don't take the mystery out of it, because once it's literally just, once it's just 13 dudes, like, you know, it's like the adventures of the 13. It just, like, I don't know if they've ever really gone into that stuff and done it in a way that just doesn't seem campy.
Well, definitely.
I don't mean Transformers in general. I mean anything that where you have characters that are mythical in a fiction, and they've been around for years but only referenced, and then like in comic books and stuff, and then the minute they do like a mini series where they go back and delve into that stuff, it really oftentimes just really takes the mystery away. And it's just, and I'm very rarely, I think, left with a feeling of, yeah, that was done right. So I don't know. I'm just a little iffy and
a little leery.
Yeah, I'm a little leery of how it's going to go. I don't really have any reason to feel that way other than I just hope it's done right.
I just want to also add in like the bulk of my excitement is more so the fact it's even happening. Because definitely it now enters into the fact, like, if this is the only thing we're going to see for another year or so, then whatever, you know, that was a really exciting moment. But to reference past events, I got this excited when Unicron showed up in Armada, and by the time we were halfway through Super Link, I was sick and tired of Unicron and the way he was being used. So it definitely is going to hit a point where I'm pumped right now, but if this is not executed well, I am certainly going to become tired of it if this becomes something that becomes tired and beaten and unepic, as Unicron became halfway through Super Link, when Unicron just became this giant thing that kept inflating while Grand Convoy kept inflating more, and so Unicron inflated harder and Grand Convoy inflated even more, and by the end of it I was just like, I don't even care that this is Unicron. This is just irritating.
Yeah, it's just some big guy to beat on for a couple episodes
and hopefully
sell a toy in the process.
And not to harp on my point that I always make, but note, I'm saying Super Link. I'm not even saying this is an Energon thing. This was Super Link effing this crap up. Like, and that is, to me, a perfect example of what I hope does not happen with the 13, because this is the rare chance for me to get this excited on a mythological level about Transformers again. And the last time that happened was Armada halfway through. And Armada ended, I think, fantastically for what was a pretty poorly delivered show. And then Super Link just took all that potential and just urinated on it. And I hope that that's not what happens.
I have enough trust in the writers because they've been doing everything so well to this point that I'll have faith in it so far. The idea of revealing the 13 now, in a sense, kind of works because we have had years of buildup in the fandom.
Years of
pondering, you know, who exactly are, you know, which old Transformers might be the 13. It's always been this huge speculation, but right now we're going to go into this period where there are no movies coming out for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if they're going to do a fourth. Don't know if they're going to reboot, whatever. It might be, you know, 5 years before we see the next movie. They needed to drop something big. And if they're going to play the 13 through Prime for, you know, a season or two, that'd be a perfect way of keeping some momentum in the franchise.
Mm-hmm. No, and it's a very good point actually made that this is happening just as we're entering, you know, the post-movie era, as I've referenced it before. It makes me very excited about what's to come. But certainly I want to make it clear, if what's to come ends up being crap, I'm not going to stand there going like, yeah, but at least they're doing it. Cause that's exactly the kind of defense that was leveled at how Unicron was delivered. And in hindsight, I think a lot of folks look at the halfway point of Super Link and go like, yeah, that blew. That a lot of people, I think, would agree that blew. Not to make a call to authority or majority here. I really hope this turns out well and doesn't turn out Super Link. And I certainly don't think these writers are in a position where it's likely that it will. But I want to cover that unfortunate potential.
Yeah, I think that's yet again where we have an advantage of this, especially it was being done in the old school theater in the round style where everybody's sitting there. So you can figure that stuff out and then animate to the tempo, not try and talk to the lip flap.
It's not even about anime dubbing. It's just about the concept of delivering Unicron after doing this awesome reveal in Armada. It's just to reduce him to an inflating supervillain.
Well, no, I'm just saying in a lot of it, I think is going to be the fact that they'll be able to play with that weight some to find the right point in a room where, you know, I would think that in the recording studio they're thinking about Prime and how all this stuff is shaking out to be able to find a bit of that tone. You know, if it's a spot where the writers are there in the room too for ad lib or fix purposes, they can take some of the earlier weight. So the stuff that they've, you know, obviously got in the can that's done now and be able to say, okay, well, when we start on season two, you know, the way that it was delivered will help shape it the other way. You know, you always hear stories about live action TV shows about how, you know, if it's a good show, quite frequently it's going to be the actor, not maybe necessarily being diva, but saying, hey, you know, well, what about, you know, this, as I've lived in the character skin for you know, the last 3 years of getting to do this, you know, that doesn't feel like the right reaction. This feels like the right reaction. And if you've got good writers on the show, they'll be like, no, you know what? You're right. And respond to something like that. So
yeah,
here's hoping that, all of the good processes that they've started will continue on.
And I will definitely also give you the lack of a dub approach helping add weight to this, because what didn't help Super Link was that the voicing of that whole sequence I keep talking about was Grand Convoy's voice actor, fantastic voice actor who's played many characters I've enjoyed. You might know him as Big Volfog or Gosei Knight. His whole epic delivery was reduced down to not just him going over and over again, but then he was pitched down when he got bigger, so he was going like, like, and that was literally all he said for about 5 minutes. And
yeah,
I hate that episode. Wow. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about with the 13 or this episode of Prime? We made a long one out of this.
Yeah.
Can we now officially say we have a reason for why Earth is a Cybertron magnet?
You know what? If they actually state that in the show, I will clap. I'm going to be like, you know what?
I wouldn't say so much as it's a reason, other than it's the natural progression.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and then even for Cybertronians, it could just be something subconscious.
Who knows?
You know, they don't even realize, you know, this planet just, man, we always come back to this
Earth. Because Transformers were created specifically to handle Unicron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it might be an instinct of nature to go, you know, follow his presence.
Well, at the same time, some of their stuff shouldn't do that. Like, knowledge vials full of sentient knowledge energy should probably not land on Unicron. Should probably land somewhere next to Unicron. Just saying, ancient Cybertronians. Just saying.
Well, no, because the ancient Cybertronians knew that to fight Unicron, you'd need a reliable energy source.
Oh, man. Can of worms. Anyway, does anyone else have any points they really want to bring up, or shall we call it for this one?
Go ahead, Aaron.
I'm probably going to say the same thing you are. We've covered a whole lot of ground, and we could probably keep talking about a lot of it, but we're going to only be able to talk in circles until we see more of the show.
Well,
I was going to say, as far as stuff to cover in an episode, this has probably been one of the most dense.
I think this is potentially the longest time we've spent talking about a single 20 minutes of Transformers Prime thus far. Because lots happened in that 20 minutes, granted.
Yeah.
But, we will be back next week once part two of this three-parter, or really part three of this four-parter, has come to pass. And hope you stay tuned for that. My one worry right now is I'm going to be at New York Comic Con when the finale airs. That's going to be difficult. One of my New York brothers better figure out a way to get a hold of that episode while we're all there, or I'm gonna give them a disappointed look, and tell them that their subway system, man, we got a cooler one here in Toronto. I don't know. I might take that back if they find me an episode.
Well, the Dark Prime encode will be up probably within a couple hours after the show airs, so you can just go back to your hotel room and download it.
Okay, man.
If you can get decent download speed,
see how easy that is.
The worst thing will be if... Oh, man, I'm not even going to say it. I just want to... Anyway, we'll be back next week with more Prime Time. We are going to be doing episode by episode because this has become a very exciting finale. And many props to Prime for pulling out the stops and flooding us with cool stuff so far. So that's been me, that's been GogDog, that's been Aaron, that's been Omegas, this is Vangelis, and we are... epically and mythologically, Prime out.
it means, but you got some badass perpetrators, and they're here to stay.